choosing the right cheese to buy isn't straightforward. And what is the key question to ask a cheesemonger anyway? Feeling perplexed about cheese, we've got some fresh insights. We're talking about the most delicious cheeses in America on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's go to our cheese experts, who are both quoted in a recent piece titled The 25 Most Important Cheeses in America, according to cheese experts. That was in Bon Appetit. Tia Keenan is the author of The Art of the Cheese Plate, Pairings, Recipes, Style, Attitude, and her cookbook due out this month is called Chevre. She also writes the Cheese Wisely column for the Wall Street Journal. Tia, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Liz Thorpe is here, founder and owner of the consulting firm The People's Cheese. She's author of The Book of Cheese, The Essential Guide to Discovering Cheeses You'll Love. Liz, welcome to you.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Well, Tia, let's start with you. Take us back in the cheese-making process. How does cheese come together? How does this work? What is cheese?
Cheese is actually a simple process that has very few ingredients. So we start with milk, rennet, starter, salt. The milk is heated, a coagulant is added, the proteins are separated from the water, and we start our way on the journey to cheese.
Liz, how is it possible that there can be so many different outcomes from this simple process, so many different kinds of cheese?
I don't know. That's why I got into cheese 16 years ago. I thought it was something of a miracle. I mean, I think that Tia is totally right. There's this fundamental, simple process, but what's amazing about cheese making is that at every point in the process, a maker can make small modifications and unique tweaks to what they're doing and wind up with something that is designed to age versus designed to be eaten immediately, or something that's going to have a really full, intense flavor around 9 months as opposed to something that's going to, you know, get milder over time. So, like, the flavor and the texture and all of the outcomes that we enjoy are all determined by these little decisions that a cheesemaker makes.
Yeah, Liz, what does age have to do with this? What impact does age have in making cheese?
Well, a huge impact. It's sort of, in the simplest terms, cheese works like us. We get drier with age.
We're not. Speak for yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, sort of, you know, over time, it loses moisture. So if you think about a soft, creamy, smearable cheese like a brie versus a hard, grainy, crumbly cheese like a Parmesan, very basically, a Parmesan is much older and it has much less water in it. But there are also a lot of things that are happening to the chemistry of cheese over time, which will dictate flavor. And like Tia mentioned, there are these starters, these bacteria that a cheesemaker can add to the milk during the cheesemaking process that have a purely taste-driven role. So they actually activate over time when there's a certain amount of moisture and salt and acid in the cheese, and they can make a cheese taste a certain way. So it's not just a matter of sort of drying out versus not drying out. And there's a whole art of cheese aging. There's actually a whole job called an affineur or a cheese ager, and that's somebody who actually buys the cheese after it's been produced when it's very young and takes over the maturation of the cheese. And they say a good affineur can take a mediocre cheese and make it excellent, and a bad affineur can take an excellent cheese and ruin it. So it's a big deal.
Well, Tia, I hear the word bacteria, and I think mold. So how does the M word, mold, come into the cheese process?
Well, when we're, I think, probably the most famous moldy cheeses are the white rinded cheeses or blue cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, there's sort of two ways that it can happen. The mold can be introduced through the environment. So the cheesemaker or affineur can have an environment, usually a cave or referred to as a cave, that where the mold is present in the environment, and the cheese picks up the mold from the environment. They can also inoculate the cheese with the mold, which means they can brush, they can sort of get the cheese started by either injecting mold or brushing the mold and then encouraging the development of that mold by controlling the environment, making it conducive to growth of that mold.
Well, Tia, what about the environment in the back of my fridge? Can I cut off those little green spots and then eat the cheese?
Sure. It depends on the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that often people will say to me, oh, I'm going to age this cheese in my refrigerator. And the truth is that there's a difference between aging a cheese and having a cheese just get old. When you store a cheese in your refrigerator, really your cheese is just getting old. You're not aging it. Cheeses that are being aged are done so, as Liz mentioned, by affineurs or by cheesemakers who are doing affinage on their own cheeses. They're aging those cheeses in a very specific controlled environment. That's not your refrigerator. If you have, let's say, a nice chunk of Parmesan and it's getting a little bit of green mold on it, you can do something which cheesemongers call facing, which is they sort of trim off the exposed parts of the cheese and then use what's underneath. But I think for a young cheese, certainly for a fresh cheese like ricotta or chèvre, if your cheese has mold on it, it's done. It's lived to its old age and died.
Well, Henry in Middleton emailed, said, I'm not vegan, but I love tree nut cheeses. One of my favorites is cashew brie. They seem to be popping up on restaurant menus. Wondering if this is a trend that you know about, Liz?
I'm going to have to, yes, I'm seeing many more of these. I was like, I'm going to have to kick this one over to Tia because she actually wrote an entire article recently about sort of milk alternative cheeses and came to the conclusion that of all the choices, you know, because there are sort of, there's many different plant and nut cheeses, in quotes, her conclusion was that the nut milk ones were the best. So she may well have a lot to add here. But
yeah.
Yes, I'm seeing a lot more of those, and I think like I'm seeing more of more tasty options that non-vegans want to eat just because they think they're good versus the thing that a vegan eats because it's the only choice they have. And that's a real shift that I've seen in the last, I would say, year. But Tia, I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, Tia, what do you
tasting? You know, it's funny because I wrote a piece on nut based quote-unquote cheeses for Bon Appetit, and I get asked about this article probably more than any other article I wrote last year. I took the challenge. I tested over 35 alternative quote-unquote cheeses, and what I was most interested in covering were nut milk, nut-based cheeses that were fermented. I think what's interesting about those cheeses and perhaps what is making them, what makes them appealing is that they have an actual integrity as a product. They have their own flavor. They're not so much trying to mimic cheese in every way as they are sort of becoming their own product.
Oh, they're kind of becoming their own category.
Yeah, and I'm interested in them not because I'm looking to replace cheese, but because I'm interested in fermented products which have a very long history, and cheese is part of that, dairy cheese. real cheese. you know, I'm thinking of kimchi, I'm thinking of sauerkraut,
sure.
I'm thinking of cheese.
In that genre, right.
Right. And so we're seeing some real skill and craft going into some of these. I mean, when I wrote that article, I didn't even, as contenders, consider like soy cheeses that you get in supermarkets. To me, those are industrial products.
Mm.
They're meant, you know, they're like any other processed food. And I'm not really interested in, you know,
exploring that, yeah. Tia Keenan is the author of The Art of the Cheese Plate. Liz Thorpe wrote the book, The Book of Cheese. Together, they're tag teaming on your questions, giving suggestions, 800-642-1234. What's the most delicious cheese you've ever tasted? Join in the conversation. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. These cheeses are handcrafted in America. There is true perfectionist tendencies behind them. Attention to detail. Artisan cheeses give us unique textures and taste profiles, but they also make it harder to know what we're buying and why when it comes to cheeses. The cheese counter can be intimidating, and that's why we've got two cheese experts on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Liz Thorpe heads up the consulting firm The People's Cheese, working with retailers and producers on specialty foods. Fun fact, a decade ago, she launched a test program with Kroger supermarkets to open branded cheese kiosks around the country, and that took off. Tia Keenan is here as well. Her new recipe book coming out this month is called Chevre, dedicated to soft, tangy goat cheese. Getting your insights and questions on all things cheese, 800-642-1234. Do you make cheese at home, DIY style? How do you do it? Have you tweaked your recipe? Are you a dairy farmer? What is your favorite part of the cheese making process? Where do you find the creativity? You can call in, you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kathleen on Facebook says her favorite cheeses are the Hickory Nut Munster from Union Star Cheese Factory in Zitto and the Farmhouse Cheddar. Kathleen says, words can't describe it. You have to taste it. So Liz, starting with you, because Wisconsin being so on top of the cheese world, what are your favorite cheeses coming out of Wisconsin?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if we could fit them all in the time that we have. But there are many, first of all. And I've been to Wisconsin a number of times for cheesemaking, you know, cheesemaker visits. And I've discovered something new every time I've come to the area. I would say some of my favorite producers are... also some of the most award-winning producers, but Uplands Cheese Company in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, makes two cheeses now. One is called Pleasant Ridge Reserve, which is an Alpine-style cheese. So listeners who are familiar with cheeses like Gruyere or Comté or Emmentaler even, the Swiss cheese with holes.
Mm-hmm.
But mountain cheeses that traditionally come from France and Switzerland and Austria, Pleasant Ridge is made in the style of those cheeses. And then the same maker makes a seasonal, Pleasant Ridge is made seasonally, and then when it is not being made, a very soft bark-bound cheese called Rush Creek Reserve is being made by the same farm. So puddingly soft, it's spoonable. These are both made from unpasteurized cow's milk. Andy Hatch is the cheese maker, and I think both of the cheeses made it into the Bon Appetit article. Rush Creek did, definitely, I know. And I know Pleasant Ridge was recommended by a bunch of us. One of my favorites, Marika Gouda, is there in Thorpe, Wisconsin. And, yes, that is my last name. I'm not biased for that reason. But Gouda is a great example of a cheese that lots of Americans have heard the name Gouda, but most of us are familiar with what's a young Gouda. So back to our discussion about age in cheese, you know, you think of red wax Gouda. Semi-soft, it's pliable, kids love to snack on it. I wouldn't call it particularly complex or mind-blowing cheese, but tasty and snackable. Aged Gouda is a totally different proposition, and Marika Gouda is making really the only aged Gouda in the United States. and it rivals the cheese that comes out of the Netherlands. So these are, you know, 1.5 to 2 year age Goudas. They taste like butterscotch and toast, and they're hard and grainy, and they're just, they're cheeses for eating or chunking or shaving perhaps, but very different from red wax Gouda. So that's an example of a producer, it's a farmstead producer in Wisconsin. They own all their own animals, they milk them, and then they use the milk to make the cheese. So it's an entirely closed process. It's not an easy thing to do all of those jobs.
Yeah, do you see that often, Liz, where they control everything like that in-house, the whole process?
Yeah, I mean, so in the cheese world, that's called a farmstead or a farmhouse, or if you're in France, fermier cheese. And what that means is that the person making the cheese also owns and is milking the animals. So you're talking about a farmer and a cheesemaker combined. And, you know, there are hundreds and even, I would say at this point, thousands of farmstead cheesemakers in America. But as you can probably guess, there's kind of a natural cap on how big a producer like that can become, because you're going to reach a point where you just can't manage more than, 500 to 700 cows is a lot of cows. They're big animals. They make a lot of milk. They make a lot of everything else. They need a lot of food. They need a lot of space. So, you know, you're inherently limited in the scale that your business can grow to. You're making an inherently handmade, hand-managed product. And Wisconsin has some producers. Interestingly, one of the things I think that's really cool about Wisconsin is that it has some of the larger farmstead cheesemakers in America, producers that have maintained that ownership of the whole process but have scaled up to a size where, for example, their cheese might be sold on the national market, not just the regional market. But that's very rare, and there are only a couple of them. So, you know, I think that sort of speaks to the balance in Wisconsin between farming and dairying and cheese making. Both are longstanding traditions in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's interesting you point out that Mother Nature putting a cap on your business, on that whole process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tia, what's on your Wisconsin cheese radar?
Well, I have to say that I'm going to echo Liz, Uplands, and Marika. And I just, this past year, wrote a book about cooking with cheese, and I used a lot of Marika Goudas, both her younger Goudas, which are like 3 and 4 months old, and her aged Goudas. I wanted to mention sort of small cheddar and big cheddar in Wisconsin. You know, I think probably in the United States, cheddar is our most iconic cheese, and we can trace that back to being an English colony. But I wanted to mention Bluemont Dairy and their bandaged cloth-bound cheddar. Willie Lehner is the cheesemaker there, and he's making really beautifully crafted artisan cheeses with, you know, such incredible attention to detail and flavor development. Also kind of a renegade in the Wisconsin cheese scene. He's over the years done a lot of experimenting and just been someone who's really deep into exploring integrity and the connection to the earth in his cheeses. And then on the flip side, I wanted to mention Widmar cheeses. This is a cheese company that makes, Liz, I'll nod to the name of your firm of sort of cheese for the people. and that's a company that's almost 100 years old, 3 generations in Wisconsin, making brick cheddars, making Colby, making something that I love from them that is their cheese spread. To me, that's like a very Wisconsin, the brick cheese spread is a very, it makes me smile and think about about cheese in Wisconsin. And so, you know, I want to echo what Liz said, that Wisconsin has this interesting mix of sort of big producers and more, you know, mainstream type of production. And then it's also home to people who are doing experimental, smaller batch stuff. And I feel like that's become more and more the case, actually, as the artisan cheese market has grown and as the general consumer is more interested in a quality level of cheese. And so that's been really nice to see.
And maybe like they really want to know. Yeah, well, they want to know where their cheese comes from. They perhaps want to know the producer or at least the process a little bit behind that cheese.
Yeah, I think that cheese is, you know, an everyday luxury in a way, or a luxurious grocery. So people are interested in cheese as something that can add a real, like, valuable experience to their eating without, you know, heading into the land of truffles or foie gras or something.
Well, we have a lot of Facebook posts here. Norma says her favorite is Hook's 15-year cheddar from Wisconsin. Let's see. Jenny in Slinger called in to ask for a recommendation for a good Wisconsin Havarti. Plain, not dill or caraway, just plain. Any recommendations?
Ooh, I have to think about that.
Yeah,
Liz, I feel like, do you have anything?
Well, one of the things that I kind of discovered in my my travels to Wisconsin is that there are a number of factory producers, you know, sort of like back on this conversation about more readily available, both in terms of quantity, but also in terms of price point. And there are a couple of different, you know, producers that make Havarti. They used to be known as Roth Kesa. They now go by Roth Sellers. Has a great Havarti that they make flavored and also plain versions that I would really recommend. But kind of what I found was that they were ubiquitous in Wisconsin, and it was really something that I hadn't seen in other places, these styles that we think of as like everyday eating foods. So block cheddars, Havartis, that kind of, you know, young Goudas, and so I would say to look for, you know, to look for that. Another company I really, really like that doesn't make a Havarti, but they make similar styles. So if you like Havarti, you'll like Gouda, you'll like Jack's, and that's Maple Leaf Cheese. I think that they really make incredible stuff. And then finally, Edelweiss Creamery is one of my favorite Wisconsin producers. They're kind of like a sister company to Maple Leaf. So Edelweiss makes Emmentaler, so the Swiss style with holes, and they make amazing Havarti. And then if you like Havarti and you live in Wisconsin, you probably already know about Butter Kesa, but a Havarti has cream added to it, and Butter Kesa has more cream added to it. So,
because you
really
just can't get enough.
It's really buttery, as the name would suggest. But, you know, anyway, that's kind of a nice. Edelweiss does the Havarti and the Butter Kesa. Maple Leaf does the Gouda and the Pepper Jack. So similar, you know, semi-soft styles. But those are some of my favorites.
Sarah on Facebook says Sartori Foods Montemore cheese is like eating cheese candy. We're talking with our cheese experts this hour of the morning show. Liz Thorpe is here, as well as Tia Keenan, talking about cheeses that are good, where cheese comes from, all things cheese. What is the most delicious cheese you've ever tasted? What about the most disagreeable cheese you've ever tried? Do you have any tucked away dairy farms in Wisconsin you think we should pay a visit to? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So, Tia, is there such a thing as a seasonal cheese that's only available during certain times of year, perhaps when a cow's diet changes?
Sure. There's actually a very well-regarded one in Wisconsin, and that's Rush Creek Reserve from Uplands Dairy, which Liz had mentioned earlier when we were talking about our favorite producers in Wisconsin. And that's a cheese that's made in fall and early winter. So it usually shows up around, I think, October, and it's pretty much done by January or February. And that's a cheese made in the style of Vacherin Montdor, which is a winter cheese. And this is a cheese that's made from milk of the cows when they make the transition from pasture to hay.
Hmm.
And it's a what I call spoon cheese. So it's almost puddingy. You can scoop it up with a spoon. It's silky, it's velvety, it's very rich, and that's a good example of.
So do you put it on crackers? How would you use it?
Sure, you can. I mean, you could eat it straight from a spoon. You can slather it on a baguette. You could warm it up in the oven and really turn it into complete liquid. It's a real, I think, in among cheesemongers and in the cheese world, everyone looks forward to the season for Rush Creek.
Liz, what do you appreciate about seasonal cheeses?
Oh, gosh, many things. But I think just, first of all, the idea that that exists. It's not just made up. It's not a romantic line that we're selling you to try to get you to buy something. Cheese is very much a product of a specific moment in time and a specific environment. People have no trouble with that concept when it comes to wine. I mean, people will pay 100 times more for a bottle of wine that's made 3 feet over a property line because it comes from a certain vineyard. And that idea is very much ingrained in sort of the value of wine and the special character of it. That's true for cheese as well. And when you think about the cycle of the seasons and what an animal's diet looks like, it has a profound impact on the flavor of the cheese. So if an animal is inside eating hay versus outside eating summer, you know, spring grasses and new flowers, the milk will reflect that, both in terms of its taste and also in terms of its composition, its fats and its proteins. So to me, you have an opportunity to like truly eat a kind of like eat a piece of a place. And with cow's milk cheeses, you know, this is like a cool tip for people listening. If you are eating cow's milk cheeses, if you find one that has a very deep yellow paste, the interior of the cheese is like a buttercup yellow color as opposed to a kind of pale bone white or pale, you know, hay color, you're looking in those bright yellow cheeses, you're looking at a grass-fed cheese. You can actually see the beta carotene from the grass that comes through the milk.
Wow.
That's what's making your cheese yellow. So, like, that's so cool.
That is so cool. We're having a heart-to-heart conversation about cheese, very, very good cheese here on The Morning Show. Wisconsin is pulling its weight in this category. Our state's cheesemakers make a quarter of the nation's cheese, producing almost 3.4 billion pounds last year. Our guest cheese experts in the house, Tia Keenan and Liz Thorpe, stay with us answering your persistent cheese questions. Join us at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin's nearly 1,200 licensed cheesemakers produce over 600 types, styles, and varieties of cheese. That's nearly double the number of any other state. So that being said, Wisconsin is number one in cheese. It's a good problem to have when we feel a bit disoriented by the dizzying array of possibilities at the cheese counter. We're getting some great advice on the best cheese in America here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Liz Thorpe and Tia Keenan are tag teaming it. Liz wrote The Book of Cheese, The Essential Guide to Discovering Cheeses You'll Love. Tia wrote The Art of the Cheese Plate, Pairings, Recipes, Style, Attitude. Her new recipe book, Chevre, is out mid-month. Getting your questions and observations about the cheese on your table, 800-642-1234. Are you a cheesemonger? Tell us about your certification process. What's the one question you love answering? Are you a dairy farmer? What's your favorite part of the cheese-making process? Where do you find the creativity? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Alicia waiting in Spring Green. Hi, Alicia.
Hi. Thank you for having the show. I have been wondering for a really long time. I am aware of Orange Rind Munster. That seems kind of pedestrian to me. It's more like brick. And there's a company that closed a long time out here. Bigelow Cheese Factory used to make Munster, but it was a completely different animal, completely different. It was a sort of cheese that if you let it sit out at room temperature, it would slump and start and get soft. And it's just wonderful. And you can get the same kind of Munster in Monroe. But those two cheeses are nothing alike, completely unrelated, and I want to know what the deal is.
Liz Thorpe, any insights there?
Oh, yeah. I was like, can I take this one? I want to answer this one. That's a great question. Oh, my gosh. So Munster is a really confusing thing here in the United States because we have a cheese that's sold in a block format, usually at the deli counter. You get it sliced for sandwiches, and it is pale orange on the outside. And the French have a cheese called Munster. It doesn't have an E in it. It's M-U-N-S-T-E-R. That's from Alsace. And it is one of the most famous European what are called washed rind cheeses. So typically when you're looking at a cheese that's orange on the outside, it is usually what's called a washed rind cheese. And that means the cheese has been washed in salt water. After it's made, the exterior is washed in salt water, and that cultivates a very specific kind of, yes, once again, bacteria, but again, controlled and desirable. And that bacteria is cultivated on the outside. It makes the cheese orange, kind of sticky or tacky, and smelly. So these are the cheeses that smell kind of like, you know, used gym socks or other less desirable things. And brick is an example of that. The caller mentioned brick. And one of the cheeses that's most famous, that Wisconsin is the only state in the U.S. making Limburger. But Limburger is another washed rind cheese. And our deli Munster is sort of a bastardization of this washed rind style. So the base recipe is very similar to brick or Limburger, but it's colored on the outside. So that orange rind is not the saltwater washed bacteria cultivated rind. It's colored with something called annatto, which adds no flavor but makes that orange hue on the outside. So your caller's absolutely right. Like, I mean, you might call sort of deli Munster pedestrian or just mild, buttery, but that there's none of that funky, salty, meaty, stinky stuff, which people like. Can you tell that's my favorite style? So if you like that, and I'm guessing that, you know, that the cheese she's referring to that's no longer made by Bigelow was a washed rind, you know, a true washed rind cheese. But definitely look for Chalet Limburger in Wisconsin, Chalet Cheese Cooperative. And Widmer makes an amazing aged brick that can get very funky. And then, you know, there are many American and European cheeses, but look for an orange sticky rind, and if it smells bad, that's good.
Alicia, does that help you out?
What I'm getting at is this other stuff is not orange, and it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. It's a completely different cheese. So it must be what you're talking about, the French thing, because it's not anything like the orange rind stuff.
It's not anything like the deli Munster.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Deli Munster is sort of orange because it's colored to be that way. But the stuff that I'm guessing, the stuff that you're talking about has had that salt water washing.
I know what you're talking about because, see, the orange stuff is tastes salty. But this mm-hmm. other stuff is not. I've special ordered it from different companies in Monroe, and it's fabulous. This is a different cheese.
Well,
I just have to come back to Wisconsin to do another tasting tour. Obviously, it's time.
There needs to be more tasting detective work here for sure. Lisa, thank you so much for the call. Well, we have Jane who called in to ask for a recommendation for a good goat chevre. Any suggestions? Tia, this is in your court.
This is definitely in my court. I've been living and breathing chev for the past several months. there's a lot of great chevs. And there's a couple of things to consider when you're buying chev. Chev is a fresh cheese, and so you want to eat it young. There are lots of little producers all over the country that Liz and I haven't even heard of that you can find at farmers markets. And I always encourage people to seek out their local chev producers. These are often women who are making, milking 20 goats or 30 goats and making fresh cheese, and you should always give them a chance. But on a national level, I mean, I think Vermont Creamery is really a pioneer in the business of chev and just making great chev. They have grown so much over the years, and sometimes you see there's an inverse relationship between the quality of the cheese and the growth of the company. And I think actually the opposite is true with Vermont Creamery. They're available everywhere, and they're just making clean, bright, flavorful, delicious chev in all kinds of formats. And I used their cheeses a lot when I was developing short stack chev.
Rick on Facebook says fresh squeaky curds are hard to beat. Can you talk about what makes a good curd and why they squeak?
Boy, sort of. I tried that one on. Well, first of all, it may just be overlooked by Wisconsin folks that curds are not a normal part of life for most Americans. I was really, I had heard of curds as a thing. And, if you go to Montreal, you can have the poutine, the curds with gravy and fries. I knew that this was a thing. But for most of us in other parts of the country, curds are not readily available. And they're definitely not part of our regional culture and cuisine. So that's just a starting point. In Wisconsin, they're everywhere. And really, curds are, so typically they are cheddar curds, young. So when you're making cheddar, you have little sort of, you go through the process Tia described earlier in the show, and you take your proteins and your fats to kind of knit them together to make working matter that can become cheese. You can press it into cheese. You can scoop it into cheese. And curds are basically the sort of building blocks of cheddar. They're unaged cheddar. So the most important thing for a good curd is that it is as fresh as possible. So I've talked to producers that say, ideally you want to eat your curds within 24 to 48 hours of their being made. And their squeakiness directly correlates to their freshness. So it's a challenging sort of style of cheese to distribute because you lose what's great about it pretty quickly. That being said, Ellsworth Creamery is in Wisconsin has done an amazing job of kind of making the curd exportable to the rest of the United States and has a couple of different packaging techniques that kind of preserve the curd pretty well so that people in, California can buy cheese curds at the supermarket and actually experience something of what you all taste every day.
So it's kind of a, it's the proximity to production really makes a big difference here.
Tia, what would you like to add there?
I was going to say that I think outside, you know, in Wisconsin that people eat cheese curds just like fresh on their own. But I would say that in the rest of the country, when we eat cheese curds, we're usually cooking them. So we're either battering and frying them or we're putting them in a poutine. This idea of like the super fresh, you know, hand to mouth cheese curd is really a blessing that is only bestowed on Wisconsinites.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, Liz emailed to ask, is it hard to make your own cheese and is it really worth the trouble? Liz Thorpe?
No. Yes and no. Yes, I would say yes, it's hard to make your own cheese, and no, it's not worth it. A lot of people will disagree with me. I'm not a crafty person, so I feel like if you are a crafty person, kind of experimenting with home cheese making is a really kind of fun and satisfying adventure because it's cool. And I do a lot of, like I pull mozzarella at home with my kids, something that they really enjoy. Making very fresh, simple cheeses. We mentioned ricotta earlier in the show, or queso fresco. That's something that I think actually, you know, in my book, The Book of Cheese, I have one recipe for cheese making, and it's making ricotta at home because it's the one cheese I think you can truly almost always make a better version of at home than what you can buy. But 99.9% of the time, in my experience, what you can buy is better than what you can make, and I'm of the opinion that there are people who have sort of devoted their life's work to making cheese, and they're doing it better than me in my kitchen, especially if you're into aged cheeses.
Well, Tia and Liz, really appreciate it. Thank you both so much. Tia Keenan's the author of The Art of the Cheese Plate, new cookbook Chevre coming out later this month. Liz Thorpe, author of The Book of Cheese. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and Cheryl Gasser. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.